You're listening to The Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one podcast discussing the complex business of divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. You can visit us at divorceandyourmoney.com. Today I'm bringing in a friend. His name is Max Townsend. And we actually met because we work in the same office building here in Texas. And Max is a real estate agent, and he has been for a long time and very knowledgeable. And we got to talking about divorce and the challenges that people have that he sees from his experience in the real estate world and a lot of the misconceptions and things that you should be thinking about as you plan to maybe just go through the separation process, or if you're planning for a new house or home of some kind after the divorce process. And he touches on a lot of things that we haven't covered when it comes to real estate in this show, and also some tips about credit reports, about what you need to do to find a house if you don't have ideal credit, or if you're still in the middle of the divorce process, or if your ex-spouse did something bad, how you can overcome those challenges even when the situation isn't perfect and you have a pile of cash to go spend on a new house. And he'll give you some strategies and some things to think about and some great tips to investigate, some tips I've never heard anywhere else in terms of things that you should be doing during the divorce process and afterwards to ensure that you can move on with the rest of your life and set up a new home, set up a new place for you, your kids, and move on with the rest of your life. So, without further ado, here's my interview with Max. Today on the show, we have Max Townsend. Max, welcome to the show.
Mr. Lehman, thank you for having me, sir.
Max, why don't you start by telling us who you are, what you do, where you operate. We're in person, if you can't tell by two great microphones in this interview.
Yeah, I'm a licensed real estate agent in Texas. I work the northern Dallas suburbs. So that's my primary purpose.
And so as a real estate agent, I'm sure you deal with people who are going through divorce or soon to be going through divorce or at the tail end of the process and moving on, and they're looking for their next home. Is that right?
Absolutely. And many times they're selling a home, although sometimes it's awarded to one side or the other. Quite common for that person to, even if they keep the home for a little while, to decide to sell it pretty quickly afterward. And so, yeah, many times there's a sale as well as a purchase. A lot of different angles there.
All right, so let's get into some of those. And let's start with the sale angle. So for someone who is selling their house, what do they need to know? Particularly if it's a divorce situation. Let's just say even it's a court-ordered sale. Are there special considerations for people in that category, or is it still a pretty similar process? Why don't you get into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty similar process in that many times as a part of a divorce, there's some sort of value that's put on the home. I think you want to, in your mind, think of that as something for that purpose and ask an agent to value the home so that whenever you are going to sell it, you're not thinking of that other number. I think you want to get a very, you know, current recent number that relates to the value.
Fair enough. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we have to deal with all the time, or I have to deal with all the time, is that people have an unrealistic value of what their home is actually worth versus what it is worth in their head, which I'm sure you have to deal with all the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All the time. Obviously, homes have a lot of different variables, and you just need somebody that's used to understanding the value of those variables and comparing it to the neighborhood and everything else that comes into play to determine the ultimate value of the home and what it'll sell for in the market.
And so for someone who's selling a house, you know, a lot of times you might have been living in your house for 10 or 20 or 30 years. And so, you know, the sales process is a once in a lifetime or only a couple times in a lifetime process for most people. What are the key things that you see people not doing that they should be doing to prepare their house for a sale, particularly when, you know, divorce might be involved?
Yeah, I think it's the same whether divorce is involved or not. And it has to do with how the buyer of your home is going to look at it regardless of your circumstances. And so many times people oversimplify what's needed before they put the house on the market. And so there are all these little things that ultimately get caught by a home inspection that will later turn into a negotiation that very rarely favors the seller. So what I advise people to do is get a pre-inspection and have the home looked at by an inspector. It's an optional thing, and in some cases, if the home is newly built or whatever, it's possible they don't have to do that step. But I have seen that it just gives people a great sense of comfort whenever they can just understand what's going to come up or not come up, and that pre-inspection is what reveals that.
And I have some cases now where, you know, a lot of times if you know you're headed in the path of divorce, it's normally not a one-day decision where you wake up and you say, I'm getting divorced. It could be 2 or 5 or 10 years or more even in the making before the timing is actually right for this to happen and the split to occur. And so one of the consequences of that is that the house falls into slowly disrepair, and there's a lot of maintenance and work that needs to be done. And then you get to a point where you have a choice, and that choice is, how far do you go with the repairs? Do you, as a home seller, do you just make minor repairs, or should you renovate the house before buying? I know, or before selling it? I know there's a lot of considerations in there, but how would you guide someone to thinking about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can go with the answer on that. And it really does depend on the situation. It not only depends on, you know, the emotional state of the people involved, and divorce probably wouldn't contribute to a renovation, but it could. It just depends on who you're trying to sell to and what neighborhood you live in, and how it's going to be best received in order to get the maximum value for the home. If you're trying to get top dollar, that's the sort of things that come up. These are questions that have to be asked and answered. If you're trying to do something quickly and you know there's deferred maintenance on the home, then, you know, I think best just to kind of quantify the decision as to, if you do this, it's going to result in X amount of return on investment. But there's always someone to buy any home that's out there. It just depends on who you're going to try to sell to. So there are a lot of even new companies out there that have popped up recently that will buy your home regardless of the condition it's in, deferred maintenance or not. Just understand you're paying a price for that. And that's okay in some cases where people just need the speed of cash, or they need to eliminate the headache of repairs. There is a time and place for those options. So a good agent is just going to lay all that out and say, here's your buyer if you don't do these things. Here's your buyer if you do these things. And here's what is appreciated in the neighborhood as a result of doing things or not doing things, because it all comes back to that too, where it's all location, location, location. So you have to understand the effect of doing something or not doing something as it relates to where that asset is.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about finding a new place. And there's a few different roads I want to go down when we get into this subject, but let's start with the first is so you're still married, or I don't know if they're, you know, still fresh in the divorce process, and you want to move out and move on. And so one of two things come to mind, and I want to get into both. One is you want to get a new apartment lease, and of course a credit check is involved in that. And then the other is buying a new home. What do you see? I know you have a lot of experience with this, is what do people have in their head versus what the reality is when they go and start looking for these new homes of theirs?
And those are definitely situations that come up every day. So I'll take the first one, you know, an apartment, you know, somebody getting divorced, maybe moving out of a house, moving into an apartment. Some of the challenges they may face would be, many times they're still on the mortgage of that old house. So there's a liability that's going to show up on their credit. And it just depends on the apartment community and their underwriting standards. But many times you can explain these things, and you, I guess it depends on what their policy is. But many times an explanation can accompany an application. And especially if there's a divorce decree that's final, then it could just be a matter of somebody following through on a process to eliminate that other party from the debt, which would help their debt ratio, you know, because that's what they're going to look at many times is, are we giving this person another liability on top of what appears to be a house payment? And so that can create like a double house payment situation from a debt ratio perspective, and that can be a challenge. The other thing that can overcome a challenge like that would just be cash. Many times, even landlords or apartment rental companies may have a policy where if you're paying a certain amount of money up front or can prove you have a certain amount of money in reserves, then they realize they're not exactly extending credit to you to the same degree as somebody who doesn't have those reserves. So that's from an apartment perspective. From a house perspective, it's probably a little more strict where if you're going to buy a house, that lender is going to look at your credit and they're going to want to see exactly what the situation is with the current liabilities in terms of if there is a debt related to a house payment that may still exist. They're not going to care about an explanation when it comes to that. They don't care about the divorce decree saying that the other party is now responsible. Until that person eliminates that other party from that debt, which is different from the ownership. So yes, there may have been a grant deed or a quit claim issued to the other party that's going to stay in the house. But until that party that stays in the house relieves the other person of the liability, the mortgage lender is going to look at that and say, we don't care about the explanation. We just see a house payment here. Until that goes away, we're going to count that. And so we see this as you're going to have two house payments.
Let's get into that actually a little bit more. So I'm in a situation, I'm married, divorce is final, right? And so as part of the divorce process, you said you'd sign up a quit claim deed, for instance. And so now the house is no longer in my name, but there's still a mortgage that has my name on it. Even though I'm no longer, at least as part of the decree, responsible for it, the lender doesn't care?
The lender doesn't care. And to take that thought further, if you were to call the lender that is servicing the loan on a house that you were responsible for with the original liability of that mortgage, but yet you now have been divorced and have a final divorce decree, and that divorce decree states that the other party has been given the ownership of the home, and normally that's in exchange for a certain amount of money, right? But that liability stays yours as that party that's released the ownership. So you have none of the ownership now, but you still are liable for the debt until that debt gets to zero or gets refinanced by the other party or that asset gets sold, which extinguishes the liability. Okay. So that definitely is something that catches people by surprise. They think in their mind that the divorce decree settles it. It only settles the ownership part. And there's another piece to it, which is the liability. I would stress that people need to really talk to their attorney, their divorce attorney, about making sure that the party that's going to get the house, release them from that liability by refinancing or selling that asset. Because it's quite a burden for that person that no longer has the ownership but is still on the liability to walk around and try to solve their own problems whenever whoever looks at their credit looks at them as having probably more debt than they're really truly responsible for per the divorce decree.
And that debt could probably come back to hurt you later, right? You mentioned something to me. We had lunch yesterday. And you'd said something interesting about being in a negotiating position where the other person can do nothing and hurt you.
If the other person decides not to make payments or to make late payments, I mean, yes, you're going to have a juicy explanation letter that you can write that could reference a divorce decree, and you can think in your head that it's not right. But the truth is, it's going to be on the credit report, and it's going to affect credit scores and decisions that get made sometimes without you even being asked to provide an explanation letter. So it's best to try to avoid that future situation by having the liability extinguished, either by selling the asset or by the party that's awarded the asset refinancing it into their name only. And I would stress that that person in that position asked the divorce attorney to make that a condition to happen within a certain amount of time.
Got it. Because, you know, it sounds like what a lot of people don't think about is, as long as your name is on that liability, whatever it is, in this case, we're talking mortgages, but any liability, it can come back to hurt you if you don't have control over it. And it's not always instantaneous. It could be a year or two or five down the line, and all of a sudden, you know, your ex-spouse starts missing payments or delaying payments or making late payments, and you're the one who has a credit score impacted by those types of things.
Yeah, not only that, and Sean, you know this better than I do. You could probably speak to this with greater depth than I can, but it would seem to me like the word divorce should mean separate completely. And if you still have your debts commingled, even though the divorce decree states that a certain person has been awarded this or that or the other, these credit institutions that have granted the credit when you were married before you got divorced, they don't care that you're now divorced. They know both names are still on it, let's say. And if you call them up, they're not going to take one name off because the divorce decree says so. They don't care. So they're going to keep both names on that liability. And it just seems to be counterproductive to the whole word divorce, because you still have a dotted line of space in your head, which relates to, did that other party make the payment this month or did they not? And that still occupies a little bit of space in your head, which you probably want to let go of, per the word divorce, let go and move on. So unless you get these liabilities untangled, they're going to occupy a little bit of space in your head. And yes, never negotiate with somebody who can hurt you by doing nothing. And that's what a person, especially somebody who may have a grudge against you now or may have some reason to want to try to spite you or whatever, it's just a bad recipe for causing you harm with them deciding not to make a payment or do this to try to get back at you or hurt you. So by all means, talk to your divorce attorney and make sure the liability side is untangled in a reasonable amount of time, or ask the question, what happens if the other party doesn't untangle the liability? I'm giving up the ownership, but I'm retaining the liability. How do we untangle the liability side?
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Stay on the bad credit path for a little bit, but in a little bit of a different context. So let's say, you know, your credit through the divorce process or just through life itself, you know, finances are complicated and things happen and you're divorced now and your credit's not the best. How do you move on? What are your best options in that position? Particularly, you know, when it comes to, we cover two scenarios. One is when it comes to finding an apartment. You had mentioned something about cash can help. And then the other is if you wanted to get a real house and have a similar space and similar-ish lifestyle to what you had before, maybe you have kids or whatever else, what are your options in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. The common denominator in any of those situations would be first to know what you look like on paper so that you can play offense instead of defense on this whole credit thing. So I would use a mortgage loan officer that you trust and ask them to pull your credit and tell you what their opinion is of your credit worthiness as it relates to like the third option you mentioned, like buying a house, okay? But that could also help you even if you were going to get an apartment, because once you know what your challenge might be on paper, you can play offense and address it ahead of time. So what any decision maker is going to want to look for in an explanation letter as it relates to credit is, what happened? What'd you do about it? And why is it not going to happen again? Those three things. That's the magic formula for an explanation letter. And so the mortgage loan person would be able to tell you whether or not it's going to work as it relates to buying a house. And there are a lot of programs that work with overcoming credit. And then it's just a matter of how much skin in the game is there and all that sort of thing. So how much money down and those sorts of factors. The other thing will come into play too with debt ratio. So the other thing we spend a lot of time on as it relates to the liability side of a house that may or may not be your ownership still. But whether I was going to go get an apartment or a house, I would want to know what my situation looks like on paper. I would use a mortgage loan officer to help me in that respect. They'll be happy to help you whether you're going forward with a house or not, just for the opportunity. And I would proactively put together an explanation letter if I were going to walk into an apartment complex and I knew there was something that would be viewed derogatory. I would put that explanation letter together and I would attach it to my application. And it would just say, on this specific trade line to this specific creditor, here's what happened. Here's what I did about it. Here's why it's not going to happen again. Because like I mentioned earlier, sometimes these decisions are made without you given the opportunity to know there's a problem. So that's just another negotiation 101 thing, which is play offense, not defense.
And I want to dig in to this negotiation letter just a little bit more because it's something we've never talked about on the show and I'm not super familiar with. How long, especially when we're talking about a divorce situation, I feel like that explanation could encompass a book for most people. But of course, someone who's writing a loan or extending you credit for an apartment or perhaps a new house isn't going to want to read a book. How long is an average explanation letter? How does someone find some good templates and start thinking about crafting one?
You know what, Sean? It's even easier than that, man. What it is the straight up truth. That's all you have to say. How you say it doesn't really matter. You know, you need to understand decision makers and underwriters and apartment complex, you know, people that make these decisions, they're people. The underlying thing there is they are people. So I think you just say the truth and you use those three things. What happened? What did I do about it? Why is it not going to happen again? Put those three things in a paragraph. And if you need to go to further detail as it relates to, you know, what was going on around the situation that caused it, let your heart be your guide. But ultimately, just write it as though you were on the other side of the desk and that is a person that's going to read it. So just tell the story and be honest and transparent.
And you had said one other thing to me is sometimes, you know, the divorce process oftentimes can bankrupt you or get close to it where you're significantly depleted in your financial resources. And maybe you don't have down payment for a house. Are there other options? What are your other options? Renting, and I think you had mentioned some newer options me as well that people might want to think about.
Yeah, so if your challenge is having cash to make it work and credit is not your problem, let's say your credit is just fine, then yes, there are ways you can buy a house with very little money out of your pocket. So again, I'm going to refer to your trusted loan officer in, you know, to find out those answers. But there are many, for example, here in Texas, there's a state program where they have money set aside to fill that gap that somebody may have for down payment. And that specific program is called SETH, S-E-T-H. So there's a SETH program. There's FHA program that allows money for down payment to come from a gift. Many times these programs can work in conjunction with your seller, whether that seller might be a new home builder or just a regular seller, where there's credit that comes from the other side to close a gap for closing costs or the down payment. And USDA loans, which are more geographic in nature, but don't have a down payment to begin with, 100% financing. So there's a lot of different options, but they're very dependent upon your situation and where you're buying the house. And a mortgage lender really needs to be the one to answer those questions. I just want to tell you that there are programs out there. There's another one too. I know of an investor specifically who's in the business of helping people buy, opening up the market. So for example, let's say they're recently divorced and they're used to living in a house with their kids and rooms for their kids. And let's say it's a big house or whatever, doesn't matter. They want to maintain that same standard of living. So there are investors out there, and what they will do is say, okay, here's what we'll do. You find the house and we'll buy it for you and rent it to you. And in many cases, they'll give you the option to buy it at the end of, like, say, the first year or the second year or the third year or whatever. And there can even be different numbers for each of those timeframes because the home's appreciating and stuff like that. So the problem that overcomes is many times people will be looking out there for homes for rent. And let's just say there's not a wide selection. There's not a lot of opportunity. It's not in the right neighborhood. They want to keep their kids in the same school. There's a lot of different factors that come up. So if that market was opened up to any house with a sign in the yard as an option, that's where these people can fill that gap. Where if you don't have a situation that works right now today to buy the house, they can buy it and rent it to you. They're basically creating inventory out of homes that are for sale, and they're just turning those into rentals and then giving people an option to buy. So there's companies that are in the business of doing that too.
Max, this is a lot of great information. Thanks for coming on the show. Where can people find out more about you?
Best place to find out about me is the website, maxtownsend.com.
Why don't you spell Townsend for us?
T-O-W-N-S-E-N-D.
MaxTownsend.com. Well, Max, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
Now, before you go, I want to make sure you get some really important information. All you have to do is go to divorceandyourmoney.com. The first thing you do on the website is sign up for the email list. You'll see a little box that says get updates and tips, and I will send you exclusive articles and content that you won't find anywhere else. And it goes directly to you, and it's a great way to reach me and ask me your questions. Second, on the coaching page at divorceandyourmoney.com, you can learn about our personalized coaching services. And here's the reality. Many of you are making financial mistakes or not getting all that you deserve as part of the divorce process. Or maybe you're just having a hard time making sense of it all and making rational decisions during this emotional time. And look, your divorce attorney is good. It's great to have a divorce attorney, but divorce attorneys are not really financial experts. And so ask yourself a simple question. Did your attorney, if you have one, explain some of the details that we just talked about in this episode? The financial issues in divorce can be really complicated, and that's why there's over 100 episodes of information, hours and hours and hours of information just related to the complex financial things that you need to be thinking about as you get divorced. And one of the big questions you might have if you've been listening to the podcast or read the book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide, or have been reading the articles that I send just to the email listeners, you might be asking, well, how does this apply to me? How does this apply to my situation and my divorce and what's going on in my life? Well, the only way to really find out, and the only way I can help you in your specific situation, is through the personalized coaching sessions. And I get to work with you across the United States, from California to New York and everywhere in between, in person, by phone, and by email, depending upon what you need. And all you have to do to start getting help is go to divorceandyourmoney.com/coaching. You'll see some videos there, and you just fill out a short form, answer a few questions, and we will set up a complimentary introductory call. Here's the deal, is once you sign that divorce settlement, there's no going back. So the sooner you get help, the better. Finally, subscribe to the podcast and make sure you automatically get updates with all the new episodes that are coming out. And leave a review. A 5-star review on iTunes really helps other people discover this show. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. Thank you for listening.